Hi guys, it's Friday the 15th of October. Welcome to another episode of We Are Curious. Our main story tonight is on Uber. First of all, before we go there, I have a guest with me on the show. Please, my guest, can you say hi to the listeners?
Hi, I'm Nicole Omaya, community manager at HISA, and
Yeah, so if you've never heard of Nicole, I'm sure you've seen all those cool posts on the HISA social media platforms. Currently, we've had a lot of posts that detail back the journey of various listed companies on the NSE. That is thanks to the good work of Nicole and the team. Probably check them out. But our main story tonight is on Uber, specifically Uber Kenya. And then maybe we'll also get to touch up a little bit on what's happening between Kenya and Somalia, specifically the ruling that was given out this week and how that will implicate us and stuff. So welcome to the show. Now, Nicole, could you tell us what's happening there?
So was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? Kenya's High Court issued a ruling against Uber. So this dates back to 2016. In 2016, 34 plaintiffs filed a lawsuit against Uber Kenya. Kindly note Uber Kenya Limited, because that will come in handy later. So the lawsuit claimed that Uber had violated their online contracts.
Yeah. Right.
And the contract said that the plaintiffs would transport the Kenya's customer base at a minimum of 60 shillings per kilometer. Yeah. And the minimum fare would be 300 shillings per kilometer. Yeah. So, and under this agreement, Uber retained 25%. But then again, Uber came to reduce the minimum rate per kilometer to 35 shillings and the minimum fare to 200 shillings and still taking 25% away.
But Nicole, before we even go to what happened in 2016, uh-huh. what was the ruling? What did the ruling this week say?
This week?
Yes. Now, as for those who are unfamiliar with the case, so the ruling this week essentially pointed out to the case in 2016, and what the High Court said, what the court said, is that there is a link between Uber Kenya, Uber BV, and Uber BV Holdings. And here's the thing: in as much as that might seem to be a small thing, the case in 2016 against Uber Kenya was ruled that, you know, there was no relationship, in that drivers had entered a contractual relationship with Uber BV, which is the
Amsterdam based company.
The Amsterdam based company, where you sign up and, you know, have contracts with when you sign up to be an Uber driver online, and not Uber Kenya. So technically, the ruling in 2016 was that, you know what, you guys cannot sue Uber Kenya.
Yeah.
And while that was let loose, the ruling this week said that, you know what, Uber Kenya is tied down to Uber BV.
There's an actual link.
Yes, there's an actual link.
Yeah.
Which is a no-brainer, because Uber Kenya is a subsidiary of course, Uber, the head company, with a 90 to 10% split between Uber BV Holdings and mm-hmm. Uber BV. Mm-hmm. And Uber Kenya, of course, is acting on behalf of, you know, Uber BV and Uber Holdings.
Yeah.
And maybe, Nicole, let's go back to the case here in 2016. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Let me just give you a few dates, if you don't mind. Uber came to Kenya in June 2015, and when the company came to Kenya, there was a lot of buzz, especially, you know, around drivers. This is because Uber was providing a cheaper way to travel, especially for consumers. So consumers who would ideally call a taxi, literally hail at a taxi, started moving towards online platforms like Uber. They were cheaper, right?
Yes. And convenient.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of predictability when it comes to price.
Yeah.
There's the fact that, you know, you can literally call a driver outside your point of view. And that made sense.
It did.
So as the company sort of continued to earn drivers, guys moved away from the normal taxi business to sign up for Uber. And I have to say this. The major signups here were because of the promise of, you know, the promise of good returns.
Mm-hmm.
As Nicole said earlier, Uber was promising around 60 shillings per kilometer.
Yeah.
And a minimum of 300 shillings. Okay?
Yeah.
And of course, this came with Uber taking a commission of 25%. And then the remaining 75% was to remain with the driver. And this is something that we're going to go into detail way later, because I actually managed to interview a couple of Uber drivers just to get the sense of what happens with the remaining 75%. And then I can't remember the exact date. Actually, on the 28th of July, 2016, that's when Uber decided to drop the rates to 35 shillings per kilometer, which is almost half of what they'd promised drivers. And they also dropped the minimum rate to shillings 200. While this made sense to customers, in the sense of customers were able to pay less for the service.
Yeah, it became cheaper for us.
It did. It became cheaper for us, but then it didn't make sense of... It did make financial sense to the drivers. You know, there's that assurance that the drivers had when they were entering the platform that they don't have right now.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. For Uber, it might not mean much because they still get to keep a clean 25% regardless. So whether they charge 60 shillings per kilometer or 20 shillings per kilometer, theirs is a percentage, not an absolute. And when we have more customers using the service, just by the sheer economies of scale, the income would multiply.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for the driver, in as much as yes, driving more customers would earn you more income, it would also increase, you know, your cost. Your fuel cost would increase, your data cost would increase, your maintenance cost would increase because you're covering more kilometers. Granted, I know the regulatory cost involved in driving an Uber would still say the same, but then the other costs here are the problem. And that was actually the crux of Kanuri and 34 others suing Uber Kenya on the 26th of October, 2016. Before we go on, Nicole, what I know you've really, really interacted with the court case. This is the 2016 court case.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? What were some of the things that we noticed? And what was the outcome, or what were the different arguments that were presented? Or maybe what's something that caught your eye in the court case?
Something that caught my eye was that Uber claims that it does not employ its drivers, but acts as an intermediary between the drivers and the clients.
Mm-hmm.
So this particular issue has caused a lot of problems, not only in Kenya, but also around the world. So in Amsterdam, earlier this year, there was a similar court case, rather. The drivers, there was an issue that the drivers are employees and not contractors.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the...
As in, with
yeah?
We've had this argument of where to classify Uber drivers across the world, right? Because I'm also aware we had a similar ongoing case in California, where... Uber drivers were or rather wanted to be classified as employees so that they can access a certain set of benefits that would not apply if they were just treated as contractors. Yes.
Yeah.
Something that caught my eye is, you know what? Uber Kenya, rather, a huge chunk of the case hung on the line of establishing a relationship between Uber Kenya and Uber BV. And the then ruling was that the relationship between those companies was unclear. And I, you know, this, when talking about court cases, I really, really prefer to talk about, or rather to paraphrase the words that are discussed here. And there was the issue that, you know what, Uber, when signing up to be an Uber driver, you actually do it online and you sign online agreements with Uber BV. So it didn't make sense to sue Uber Kenya because Uber Kenya was not privy to that contract between Uber BV and the drivers. But then again, somewhere along the line came the argument that, you know what, Uber Kenya is just a shell company acting on behalf of, of course, Uber BV, which is based in Amsterdam, which is actually the truth of the matter here, at least in my opinion. And here's the thing.
So was Uber being sneaky?
Which one?
I mean, starting from the top, Uber BV, then Uber Kenya.
I think I feel like the long distance relationship, all pun intended, between Uber, mm-hmm. Uber Kenya, and Uber subsidiaries. And it's not just an issue of Uber Kenya here, but the fact that there is a space in between that relationship allows, you know, it presents legislative hurdles,
yeah,
when it comes to suing Uber. There's that string of relations.
Uh-huh.
And we've seen how shell companies mostly allow corporates, rather, to get away with things, and sometimes individuals. This is not alike, but then we've seen what's happening what's been happening with the Pandora Papers.
Ooh.
That's not a box that we're opening anytime soon.
Yeah.
But then Something that really, really caught my eye was the argument here of Uber drivers. And you know what? Uber drivers were saying that the various offers that we have and the reduction of fare, especially to customers, was affecting them financially. So this is what I thought. You know what? I was like, how about we go down to the ground and find out what it actually costs to sign up for Uber. And that's what we wanna talk about on the platform. Oh my God, I've been on mute for so long. So that's what we wanna talk about on the platform. And this is what it costs to be an Uber driver. In case you missed a few minutes of the podcast, we're gonna air it live, and you will definitely get that. But Nicole, I talked to one of my former Uber drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Former is an estranged relation because you never know when you're gonna bump into them again.
Yeah.
But then these were the costs that would be involved in getting into an Uber. But before I get that, I know we have a lawyer on the chat, and I'd like to say hi to her. Hi, Rima. Looks like Rima is indisposed. Anyway, what does it actually cost to be an Uber driver? And of course, the first thing that you need to be an Uber driver is definitely a car.
Definitely.
And the requirements that we have for a car is a car that's between 650 to 1,300 cc's, right? And most of the cars that we have seen in this category, or rather, in your experience, most of the cars that will carry you if you're riding Uber in Kenya, it's either a Honda Fit, a Passo, it's Suzuki. A Mazda Demio, it's a Suzuki Alto, the Kadudu, you know, it's a Vitz, it's a Nissan Note, it's yeah. a Toyota Raptis, and there's that range of small cars. So of course, before you sign up for the platform, either you have that car or you plan ways of acquiring it, which could include, you know, going to a financier, like a bank. I remember when Uber entered the country, they had partnered with CBN Bank to allow drivers to get cars on loans. Of course, some people who own cars chose to put their cars on Uber, and some people who do not own cars decided to be employed by people who own cars on Uber, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember earlier we had bigger categories for cars. Do you remember? I don't know, Nicole, how long you've been riding on Uber, but
since it came out, what do you mean?
rich people problems. But then, so when Uber came out, I remember you'd find cars as big as a Toyota Fielder, a Raptis, and this is because at that time Uber had bigger categories of cars. I think this was under the category of Uber Select. Was it Uber Select or Uber X?
Uber Select. I feel like it was Uber Select.
I can't remember which was it. I remember one of them was for the quote-unquote higher
Ubers for like 7 passengers. I think it was Uber Select. Yeah. Might be wrong.
That is Uber Family.
If you're going out to a party and you're like 7, you choose Uber Select. Was it Uber Select? Might be wrong.
No, I can't remember well, and this just shows you how long I've been riding Uber. I remember we had Uber. I think it was Select was the expensive one, and yeah. then X was the normal one.
Yeah, before Chop Chop, right?
Yeah, before Uber Chop Chop came, and now yeah. I know they've added Uber Pool. You can actually
there's Uber Pool.
Yeah, there's carpooling services.
Kenya.
When was the last time you were in an Uber banner? And then, of course, there's the usual Uber Boda, in case you don't want to send a lot of fare. And then, of course, we have Uber Connect. But then, at that time, when we had other categories of bigger cars, we also had Uber XL, I remember. Though you could use a bigger car to drive in the platform. But then I know they phased them out in Kenya to leave... just a normal Uber car, Uber Chap Chap, and then, of course, Uber Pool and Uber Connect and what's the other one? Uber Boda. So when they still allowed bigger categories in Kenya, you could still come in with your old car. So after they phased them out, you either had to get another car, or, you know, that big old car of yours would be phased out gradually. Yes? So here you're thinking, if you're buying a new car, there's the cost of acquisition.
Yeah.
If you're getting your car through a loan, there's the cost of the car, and then of course there's the interest rate of the loan, including, you know, the different charges that come with it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then apart from that, you have to get a PSV license. So go to a driving school, get a category A, B. Get a category A license. I think A, B, C, E applied at that time. When they started, you could simply get an endorsement if you had a B, C, E license.
Mm-hmm.
But then now you have to get an A, and then of course you have to get a PSV badge, because you just having a car, a personal car, doesn't necessarily make you fit.
So this means I have to go back to school and get a class A.
Um, Well, at the moment, you need a class A to get into Uber. But then beyond just the driving license, you need a PSV badge to show that you're actually approved to drive around people.
All right.
For public transport purposes. The same way Matatu drivers have a badge that allows them to drive you. In as much as you can drive, Nicole, you simply can't get into an Uber and drive people around.
Well, that sucks. Okay.
Well, you planned to...
Yeah, it's like a hassle.
Did you have a car that I don't know about? Anyway, away from that, so a PSV badge would cost you around 1,000, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the catch. A PSV badge needs you to have, of course, good conduct, so you'd still need another 1,000 for that, okay? And these are just some of the entry costs you need. So a car, PSV license, PSV badge. Of course, once you acquire the car has to get comprehensive insurance. So you just can't get
a third party.
You're driving. No. For you to actually run on this service, you need comprehensive.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Apart from comprehensive, if you're on Uber specifically, there's two level of inspections. Of course, there's that annual inspection required by the government, which would cost you around 1,000. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Uber inspection. And let me give Uber what they deserve. Uber here has partnered with Auto Express and Kingsway Tires for inspection. So instead of 1,000, I think you'll pay around 600. They'll check your lights, they'll check your wipers, they'll check cracks on windows and whatnot. And then of course, as of any driver in the PSV, you have to renew your good conduct annually. And then of course, the PSV badge is renewable. And is it a driving license renewable? I don't have a driving license.
Yeah, after 3 years.
After 3 years.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So you see, there's that annual recurrency of cost. And then of course, there's the daily cost here, Nicole. For you to run an Uber, you will be outsourcing for car wash services.
Of course.
Maybe once or a couple of times a day, depending on how you want to clean your car and depending on whether you're driving around the Juja rail area or not.
Mm-hmm.
This is the data cost. And I checked the Uber website.
Yeah.
And the Uber website says that on average, I think you need around 3 GB a month.
For what?
Data.
3 GB.
Yeah, this is just to run Uber, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then of course there's the maintenance of the car. How much would 3 GB cost you for a month?
If it's Airtel, it would be cheaper. If it's Safaricom.
How many Uber drivers have you met that use Airtel? Quite insulting. Anyway, of course, that would cost you maybe around 300 shillings.
For 3 GB?
A GB is 100. That's for daily validity.
Oh, daily, okay.
But then for a month, it might cost you maybe 300 to 500. I think 1,000 worst case scenario.
1,000.
Worst case scenario,
it's
right?
1,000.
Okay, and then there's the maintenance of the car,
mm-hmm.
which again varies depending on what car you're driving, because since we are a country that imports cars, your parts might not always be available, and the rarer the parts, the more expensive they are.
Yeah.
And then this is also subject to driver behavior.
What do you mean?
If you constantly run your car across potholes and those nasty bumps in Kileleshwa, you will have to repair your shocks more often than other people.
I feel like this is what happens when you outsource a driver, but if it was you...
But that's the thing. For you to expand as an Uber driver,
uh-huh.
or for you to expand as any business, you need scale. For you to have scale, you need to employ people. So it's not something that you can run away from. Of course, you can reduce that risk by just employing the right person.
There's never the right person, but you.
I wouldn't know. Here's the thing, yeah?
Uh-huh.
There's that. And I know you might be listening and you're wondering, why am I going to, or why are we going through the trouble of explaining to you these costs? This is because all these costs are costs that are actually tied to that 75% that the driver goes home with.
Yeah.
And that 75% reduces whenever Uber charges less.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If you're paying, whatever you're paying in Kenya for Uber is way cheaper compared to what other people pay globally.
Really?
Oh, yeah. What? Oh, no, 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 no.
Like, so we're enjoying Kenya.
Yes. I talked to a couple of German friends, and they were telling me that whatever we pay in Kenya is so little for Uber. Let me, you know what? Uber actually has a calculator. Let me put a random destination in, say in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to remember random destinations.
So have you been in from the US? Movies. I almost thought you've been in the US.
I actually have.
You have?
Yes.
That's a lie.
So let me see. Why can't I get price estimates? I'm trying to get price estimates, but then again, I'd have to get distances and.
But we have established we're having it way.
Yes,
we're enjoying it.
Of course, we're
way cheaper.
We're enjoying, like, in Kenya, Uber is significantly cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
This one I'd have to go to Google Maps and do all that. Anyway, as I do that, Uber is cheaper in Kenya than it is in many other parts of the world. Okay? And I also think it's cheaper because of the different regulatory costs. Okay. As you said earlier, there are minimum wage regulations in other parts of the world.
Mm.
I think we have minimum wage regulations in Kenya that do not necessarily apply on paper. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are, of course, we've had the contention between Uber drivers in states like California, in countries like the Netherlands, on whether they should be treated as employees or not.
Yeah.
And all that factors into the cost. Into the cost of an Uber, because in the end Uber has to make money, but then it has to cater for all those. And in Kenya it doesn't. And here's the thing: if Uber were to cater for all that, if Uber were to cater for all those things, rather, it would have to charge more. And for Uber to charge more, it would scare away customers.
But the fact that it's currently charging less in Kenya means it's hurting the business owners, right? Or not necessarily.
That's actually what we're trying to talk about here. Yes, the fact that Uber is charging less here means it's hurting the drivers. Because some expenses are not like percentages or something. They're like the absolutes.
And that was what the case was about.
And that is exactly what was the case of.
Yeah.
That's why we had the case. Because the drivers were like, you know what? This is what, actually, quote unquote, I have a quote from the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
The case file read, drivers entered an agreement online with certain levels of financial assurances.
Mm-hmm.
And the assurances were a minimum fare of 300 shillings.
And 60
and shillings. Like a fixed charge rate of 60 shillings per kilometer. Okay. I have figured out the mathematics. So for 65 I've put in two random addresses, which is 752 West Main Street to Buffalo, which is around a distance of 41 miles. 41 miles is 65 kilometers. How much do you think Uber would charge you here?
65 kilometers is a lot.
How much would you pay for 65 kilometers here?
In Kenya, 65 kilometers is like from where to where?
I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe a place in Kajiado to a place in Wangige. Like, I'm thinking maybe from Isinya to Wangige. I am confident that's going to be maybe around 2700. And I can actually find in my Uber app. But then in the US, that would cost you for an Uber Connect, that would cost you around, $55, $35, which is like, that's what? 55, 35 yeah. Times 110. This dollar rate's banner. It's actually 6,088 shillings.
So it's almost double.
That's close to almost double what they charge here.
Okay.
And I wonder what they charge per kilometer. Because the cost of cancellation fees is like, I think it's $5.
Almost the same as here.
It's $500 when you cancel an Uber. I don't cancel an Uber. Why would I do that? I'm not rich or something. But like, that's the thing. And so 55 is the littlest you'd pay. If you're going for Uber XL, you pay for like, you pay 96. So the fact that, back to the expenses here, we talked about car wash, we talked about data, we talked about maintenance, and assuming you haven't trained any part of your car as an Uber driver, assuming you're not replacing the shocks, the tires, the maintenance that you'd probably have to do every month is an oil change. Which is done when you drive your car from between 3,000 to 10,000 kilometers. And you'd have to replace your oil, you'd have to replace your oil filter and your air filter. And this will cost you around $3,500 a month if you're doing it independently. If you're doing it with like Uber partners, like Auto Express, that's
$2,800.
Mm-hmm. But then most drivers are arguing that, you know what, as Uber continues to charge slower, we're not making enough money. When I talked to a driver today, they were estimating the net revenues in a day to be around 2,000 shillings.
A day?
Yeah. And remember, I have to warn you, that's a net revenue, of course, after they've paid commissions, fuel, but then they can't, or rather they have not accounted for maintenance, because that's daily money. So maintenance is something that's going to pop up. They're going to have to dip into their pockets.
Yeah. So not enough.
But this is what I'm curious about. This is why we're here. This is the curious case here. Nicole, would you be willing to pay more for an Uber if it means that the driver is getting a fairer deal?
How much is more?
We're at the office's end. Here to town is around 300, right?
Yeah, correct.
How much would you be willing to pay from here to town?
Well, I have a good guess. If it meant that the drivers would get a sustainable profit, $500 max. Past that, no.
Yeah, that's 10 times what you'd pay in a matatu.
But yeah, you pay for the comfort zone.
If you walk to Chiromo.
Hey.
Too far, right?
Too far.
Too far. Okay. Anyway, that was a curious case today. But anyway,
would you pay more if it meant that the drivers are getting their profits? Would you be willing to, is the right question?
From where I sit, I would I'm a customer. I'm trying to reduce my costs.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you don't use
them. Listen.
Day.
Okay. Listen to me. Listen to me. Okay.
Cool.
I am a customer. I am trying to reduce my costs.
Mm-hmm.
But if all platforms charged more, I'd have no option.
Ooh.
Do you think you'd stop using Uber because Uber bumped their prices by what, 100? No, you won't.
I wouldn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a cost I'd be willing to
pay. It's a cost you'd be willing to pay. And yeah. I'm curious of what happens now that the court has ruled that, you know what, Uber Kenya, Uber BV based in Amsterdam are related. Because
mm-hmm.
this is what the plaintiffs had asked for earlier. No. This is what they asked for in 2016.
Uh-huh.
We're revising it five years later,
mm-hmm.
As if it's a national election.
Mm-hmm.
That asked for damages, first of all.
Okay.
For the difference in what they expected in terms of earnings. So the difference between the minimum charge of 300. And what Uber started charging from the 28th of July 2016, which is 200 shillings.
Yeah.
Or, and the difference between your...
And or,
thank you. Kizungu ilikujana mimi. The difference between the 60 kilometers, or rather 60 shillings per kilometers and 35 shillings per kilometers. And this is what those damages would look like. This is going to be that difference times the number of trips, which I think would probably look at the number of kilometers. If we're looking at the charge per kilometer, we're going to look at the number of kilometers a driver has driven. Oh, also damages for the breach of contract, yeah, of course. And then, of course, Uber would shoulder the cost of this case. Now that we're back in court, that's what I'm curious about. That is what I'm curious about.
Something I'll be watching closely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But if you're out there, I'd love to hear, would you be willing to pay more in case, or rather if you feel like the drivers are getting a better deal, comment on our social media platforms. Comment on the link below this podcast, which I'm going to post tomorrow morning. Definitely not tonight. I need a weekend. Comment on it. Let's hear from you. Yeah.
Oh.
But something else that caught my mind also this week is Somalia and Kenya with the ruling. Is it something that you were looking up for, Nicole?
I mean, I watch news, so.
Wow.
I bumped into the story.
Yeah, I was. Something that caught my eye in that case was the fact that Kenya decided to. Oh, there's no way of saying it nicely. Let me find the right words. You go
reject,
first.
Reject. Kenya rejected. Is it? It rejected the ruling. Uhuru was like, no, he's not willing.
He's not willing to accept the results of the ICJ.
Yeah. He said it boldly.
I don't know. I think that's something.
And accused the ICJ of bias.
That is something that I would let, I'd let someone with more experience comment.
I know.
And I'm just going to call them out. Hi, Rima, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
How are you this evening?
Oh, I am dandy. It's a nice Friday evening. How about yourself?
I'm good. I made it.
Thank you so much, by the way. For those who do not know, the voice behind the mic, mediated by several internet service providers. Her name is Rima Mugiri. Maybe Rima, you can tell us more about who you are.
My name is Rima, and I'm from the High Court of Kenya. So I mainly practice banking, financial services, real estate, and, you know, I mix here and there, commercial law, family law, a little bit of everything, but mainly banking and financial services.
Right, so you're the right person to come with it, to come to in case my girlfriend breaks my TV because of a text, yes?
You need to buy shares in my company.
Right. Like that. Right. Rima, I remember we were discussing with you earlier on Twitter with regards to what's happening in the case between Kenya and Somalia. I don't know if you want to highlight some of the summarize what has been happening in short to our new listeners who might not have an idea.
Somalia actually went to ICJ.
Right.
I'm so sorry. I was getting a phone call. Sorry.
It's okay.
A dispute over a coastal line, I guess. Kenya could not agree with Somalia on how the
on essentially how we're gonna divide the maritime border.
The maritime border, but Kenya was basing its argument on the bilateral agreement we had with Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
Which really doesn't have any precedent in the world. It's just an agreement we had with Tanzania. And Somalia was, of course, went to ICJ on the principle of equidistance. So you'll find this principle set out in Article 15 of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. Right. You can go that right. United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, Article 15,
mm-hmm.
the principle of equidistance. So basically, I think from my opinion, or from my reading of the case, the argument put forth by Kenya would have been on the principle of equity. So there's a way to judge. The notion of equity is attached to the delimitation of the of coastal shelf, you would say, in a process that was proclaimed maybe in 1945, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The North case, the North Sea case by the US president. The equitable principle. And Somalia was on the basis of equidistance, which is basically the line of the point of which the nearest points or baselines of a country,
mm-hmm.
of the territorial sea, is measured.
And maybe?
So, as you pointed out, Kenya withdrew from the case.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, maybe I think because Somalia had a stronger case. Kenya was basing the argument on the fact that they've done this before with Tanzania, but the Tanzanian border issue was settled between the two countries on agreement. And the proceedings began much of this year prior to which Kenya had, requested for delays, which was seen as a move. Like, you can speculate that Kenya wanted, in case the ICJ sided for Somalia, if they pull out of the case, they would later disagree with the judgment.
Right.
As you know, Kenya and Tanzania are signatories, so they're bound by the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So by pulling out, withdrawing from the case, then you can later, refuse to abide or agree with the findings of the judgment of the ICJ.
Right. And maybe a curious question that we'd have is, we have, of course, we've, after Kenya has deferred from the ICJ a couple of times, alleging that it needs more time to prepare for the court case. And,
yeah.
You know, the court finally released the ruling, right? What was it?
Yes. So the ruling was not really completely in favor of Somalia,
mm-hmm.
but it was more in favorable of what Somalia wanted than what Kenya wanted.
That's really complicated.
Yeah. So the dilly-dallying of Kenya before was probably trying to bulldoze Somalia into maybe using the AU, which
mm-hmm.
Kenya has very significant say in, and probably the AU will decide in favor of Kenya.
Right.
Or try any other method of mediating over the issue. So the case was decided more in favorable of Somalia than Kenya.
In what
based
way?
Based on the equidistant principle.
So does it mean that Somalia gets the 200 nautical miles?
So Somalia gets the area in dispute was around 100 and something square kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So Somalia got a big chunk of that than Kenya did.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area which is said to probably have very lucrative natural resource extraction that would go on there. That
mm-hmm.
Kenya was already trying to explore that, which favors Somalia more than it would Kenya. Of course, it takes more away from the Kenya economic zone, but I think even though these two countries have to accept and the judgment is binding,
mm-hmm.
we don't know how to enforce it. And given the history between Kenya and Somalia, the security frictions, you may say, we don't know how Kenya is going to. Of course, the president rejected this ruling, but what is going to be the reaction on the ground in this ruling?
Thank you so much for clarifying that remark. And maybe a question that I would have for you is, whose responsibility is it to actually enforce the ruling? What is some of the impact that we expect to Kenya, apart from, of course, losing access to some of the minerals that we were looking into? Mm-hmm.
Somalia gets a more strategic geopolitical position,
mm-hmm.
as they would have this area that has potential for exploration for all the minerals and oil you get from exploring the area.
Right.
So they would get more say in the region than Kenya would.
Right, right. Yeah.
So sorry, I think my internet is really
hot.
Sorry.
No, you're actually clear. It's okay. Yes, this is definitely something that we're curious about, and it's something that continues developing. Of course, as Rima stated in the previous past, we've seen Kenya and Somalia push and shove each other, at least from a diplomatic point of view, with one country closing its embassies And of course, we've seen the expulsion of ambassadors and some sort of dancing around different social and political and engagements. But I guess since we have a ruling now, it's a matter of wait and see, right?
Yes, even though we have the ruling as pointed earlier, how will this ruling be enforced? How will you force Kenya to accept the judgment of the court and, you know, seize the area that has been given away to Somalia? So I guess going forward, the best thing would be, you know, still entering into discussion, maybe using the AU. But in my opinion, Somalia had a stronger case because even Kenya foresaw that and withdrew from the case so that they can later. Since we're both signatories to, you know, ICJ, we are bound by decisions that are made.
But then the participation needs express consent from the individual countries here, right?
Yes. So Kenya not participating is essentially just trying to. They foresaw that ICJ would be in favor of Somali based on precedent. Recent cases regarding maritime disputes that have been tried, so we have been heard at the ICJ, have been based on that precedent of the Buddhists. And so Somalia had a stronger case, but given the history of Somalia and Kenya and, you know, in the region, what does that mean for Somaliland and Puntland? Do they join in with Kenya? Or, you know, how does Kenya handle this going forward if they do not want to accept the ICJ judgment?
Maybe there's something that you mentioned here, which is the involvement of other multilateral bodies like the AU. Hypothetically, do we have any other body that has appellate jurisdiction over the ruling of the ICJ?
So, really don't. Once you go to ICJ, that's it. Whatever judgment they pass is binding between the countries. It's the enforceability of those judgments that is the problem. How do you, once you pass the ruling, how do you make a country, you know, fall off with that? So, since we know probably Kenya is not going to, we could have, you know, the sort of like mediation talks, maybe from African bodies that will get more say and have more respect, will gain more respect from both countries. Because already Somali accepted the judgment, even though they didn't get everything they wanted.
It was more in their favor, of course.
It was more in their favor. Kenya as a country loses more, especially if. But also, there's the point of, you know, countries moving away from fossil fuels and, you know, the oil industry. Somalia want to, you know, engage in exploring those waters where they say, you know, they may have a lot of wealth in it. Is that the route that Somalia wants to take? And, you know, given also the history between Kenya and Somalia, how would that play out? You know, I've heard people say Kenya should go to war. That it shouldn't be an issue that we should go to war over. If we could have like some, you know, bilateral talk, or even go to the AU, it could be better than, you know, straight going to, we're going to war over this, or we withdraw our forces, the army support in Somalia. Because, you know, Kenyans feel like they've been fleeced. We give you protection and you repay us by taking us to ICJ. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much, Rima, for shining light to that. In case you just joined after Rima came in, Rima joined us today to give us more legal insight to what's going on between Kenya and Somalia and the ruling that was given at the ICJ, which more leans towards Somalia, as she correctly said. You should definitely follow Rima on Twitter at Rima Mogiri. That is at RimaMogiri. Rima, thank you so much for joining us on We Are Curious.
Thank you so much, and I'm sorry I was a bit flustered. I was rushing home to make sure that I was here for this.
Typical Kenyan problems. We appreciate you for going the extra mile.
Thank you so much.
Right. To our listeners on We Are Curious, this is all we had for today. Two curious cases, which is the curious case of Uber drivers versus Uber Kenyan, Uber BV. We're waiting to see what will happen now that the court has ruled that Uber Kenya has intricate relationships or is interlinked with Uber BV and Uber Holdings. Will this bring back the court case? Will the drivers get the damages? And of course, the curious case of Kenya and Somalia at the ICJ. What now that the ICJ has given out its ruling?
And Kenya has rejected.
Our president has rejected, mm-hmm. and we have sentiments being aired all over.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining today's show. Of course, this show is brought to you by the Hisa app, which is where you want to get all your market data, where you'll be listening to this and other amazing podcasts by the Hisa and the Kenyan Wall Street team. Also, it's a place where you want to be buying your global shares soon enough. Download Hisa app on Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. If you're more of a markets guy, I know this is a Friday podcast. I like to call it a chill cast. If you're more into markets and investments, I highly recommend Markets Monday, or popularly known as the Weekly Market Updates. It's a podcast done by our chief financial analyst, Felix Ochieng. That's where you want to get all your analysis of what happened in the previous week and some of the things that you want to look out for in the coming week. Thank you so much for joining this podcast. My name is Ali Mwakaneno, your host, and I was co-hosted by
Nicola Meyer.
Have a lovely day.
Bye.
Bye.